Yes, we've got it all. Media manipulation, video manipulation, costume advice, the double half Wappinger, and road trip, plus the kind of ending that makes it impossible to stop watching one of these shows. The Jessica Jones After Show starts now.
You're tuned in to AfterBuzz TV, the ESPN of TV talk. Now, let the buzz begin.
Yes, indeed, I am the double half Wappinger. I am Christian Blatt. Welcome to the Jessica Jones After Show. We're talking about Season 3, Episodes 7 and 8. Double half Wappinger, the title of Episode 7. Camera friendly, the title of Episode 8. And none could be more camera friendly than my co-hosts.
Oh, I thought you were going to go to Adam, because he definitely is more than me.
Oh, my goodness. That is nice of you to say.
I almost did a spit take, but I didn't have the liquid in my mouth yet.
So you almost literally just choked on your tongue.
Yeah, wow.
April, say hello to the people.
Hello, people.
And Adam, you can also say hello to the people.
Hello, people. These are some good episodes to talk about. We get some action. We finally get some more superhero stuff happening on camera that we can see. I think they just save their effects budget for like a couple episodes later on.
I think they have a certain number of jumps for Jessica person.
Like, it's not a lot.
It's maybe three. I don't
if we're
know
lucky.
Because we had an off camera jump in an earlier episode. I think this is the first on camera jump that we get so far this year. But we'll talk about
how did they do
that.
It on the $6 Million Man? Was it usually just like that was slow and they'd show him jump and land? Right. I think they kind of did the same thing.
Yeah, they would. Yeah, exactly. They, it was like cutting away from the action.
A lot of
you know? And. we're gonna go through our thoughts on episodes 7 and 8, and stick around at the end. We will give you some no filtered moments from either or both.
Taking off
episodes.
The filter.
That's right.
Ooh. Taking it off.
They're
breathing clear,
just like Malcolm taking it all. Just saying. So episode 7, the double half Wappinger, does begin with Jessica asking, how many superheroes does it take to lock up a psycho killer? More than two, apparently, because of the simple fact that they're not able to put Salinger away. And then who seizes on the opportunity, the famous phrase to never let a good crisis go to waste? Jerry Hogarth figures out a way to get her struggling firm, as it is characterized in this episode, into the release of Gregory Salinger. Talk about where we're at the start of episode 7, April, where, you know, Hogarth makes a surprising to anyone who doesn't know her, I guess, but not particularly surprising entrance into this part of the story.
I thought she had, like, some boundaries that she wouldn't cross, maybe some sort of loyalties, but no, she is just out for herself. I am so mad at her. She was literally my favorite character, and she is just in it for herself.
Well, I think in some of the past seasons, she's had some fun parties that it might have been fun to be invited to, but yeah, I think she's very complicated, and even her, with this tactic of trying to get publicity for her firm, she's like, I didn't realize you were going to say that about Jessica, you know, because she's made it clear that they're not really friends, but this wasn't exactly the tactic she wanted to take. How do you characterize the relationship, Adam, between, Hogarth, Jessica, and of course also Salinger at this point?
I thought, are there no depths to which she will not plunge? Hogarth, are you kidding me? This is the woman that you offer. You are going to give her the suicide pills.
Right, and I think she still has them. Did she take them or did she leave them there?
I think she left them there.
Yeah, I think she did leave them
I think
there.
Jessica may have crushed them up and snorted them because they just give her a good time and don't actually do the job because of her super metabolism. But yes, then they try to back off by having Hogarth were like, I didn't know you were going to say that. So, but you know, Hogarth knows that Jessica is the one that like busted this guy or you know, this guy had come out against Jessica. So Hogarth knows what she's doing. I don't, it's like she's the most irredeemable person who's constantly somehow redeemed.
Yeah, and you just, people like that, you always figure, like, at some point, you know, at some point you figure your luck's going to run out, you know? And I mean, we have this diagnosis for her, but even still, she just flies in the face of pretty much every expectation. I think that Salinger, consistent with his outlook on everyone, wants Jerry to prove she's as good as she says he is. But she's also said, the only time I've ever failed is when a client has undermined me. And so it's like, so, you know, if you do that, I can't say this is going to work out for you.
Because he's got the law degrees, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right, exactly.
He points that out.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, so you go ahead and represent uh-huh. yourself in court.
But and he's also aware that Hogarth needs the big win. Mm-hmm. He says that you need me more than I need you. He is just the cockiest, mm-hmm. so full of himself. Everybody's a fool in his eyes.
Yeah, right, exactly. And that's why he kills the fools.
Right.
Because he is the fool killer. And I think that it doesn't take long for Jessica to come calling at Hogarth's firm. And she makes a very pointed remark to her that when you cozy up to maniacs, people get hurt. People around you get hurt. It's like, hey, remember how things worked out for you the last time you associated with a psychopath? For me, I thought that what Jessica says to Jerry is, it looks like you finally found someone to put you out of your misery. He just might enjoy it a little bit too much. So do you think that Jerry is taking to heart, Adam, what Jessica's doing in terms of warning her? Like, this is a really bad guy, you know? There's no way this goes well for you, Jerry.
I think Jerry is a victim of her own hubris, and she only sees what is right in front of her, which is this big public relations win. No, it's very stupid. I mean, this could be her tragic flaw. This could be she might get her wish, as Jessica points out. Yeah, it's incredibly stupid. And Hogarth is trying to hide behind the fact that, you know, her job is not to prove guilt or innocence, just to prove that you can't convict this person, to prove to a jury, you know, to defend this guy unless there is no reasonable doubt that he is guilty of a crime, you know. So and at this point he's not being accused of a crime, right? I mean, at this point he's off the hook, so there's no trial or anything impending.
I love how many times everyone says alleged murder.
Yeah, everyone says alleged, yep. And it's just like, okay, yeah, but, you know, for Jessica, it's like, no, he's a murderer. Mm-hmm. Like, she knows it, and she doesn't need to throw that around. So, as part of all of this, Salinger introduces into the media this notion that there are two of these female costume mm-hmm. vigilantes. And that leads to Jessica's phone ringing off the hook. And I think Jillian is really earning her 8 hours that she gets paid for. Mm-hmm. 'Cause we know she clocks out at 4:59 from, I think, the first episode of the season. She knows Jessica well enough to explain to people calling. It's like, basically, Jessica doesn't like people, so she would never work with a partner.
I loved that line.
Yeah, I thought that was fantastic. When that happens in the episode, April, mm-hmm. you know, when it becomes apparent, what sort of feeling do you get for Trish? For me, she doesn't seem at all disappointed that people are aware she exists. I think part of being the hero is that really she craves that attention.
Mm-hmm. We had
episode 2 called Thank You. She wants to be thanked. She wants to be appreciated.
It's Patsy.
You know, yeah, it's Patsy, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, how much do you think it bothers her at all, this idea that it seems kind of inevitable at this point? People are going to figure out who she is and what she's doing.
I think she wants it at this point that, yeah, absolutely, she wants the recognition. And you can just see when she does those infomercials that, like, she is in pain. Like, mm-hmm. she does not want to be there. This is what she wants to do. She wants to help people, and she wants people to know that she is doing good.
Yeah, and I think we'll see a lot of that as we talk about these two episodes. But there is the realization of, you know, Jessica even says it, is that everybody screws up their first time out. So then they figure out that what they really need to do is figure out who the first person was that he killed and, you know, really investigate that case. Now, something that I referenced in our previous after show was when he mentioned the fact that his brother died. Well, that seems like a good place to start.
And, mm-hmm. yeah, and you were right on. And this kind of starts the real detective work, right? Yeah. Like, this is a detective show. It's that hard-boiled noir detective show as well as a superhero show. So this is like this is what makes them form their team up, where mm-hmm. we see Trish and Jessica working together, not as like a superhero duo, but from the detective side.
Right. They work together in the way that they would have in the past, even if Trish didn't have any powers. And what better way than a road trip to a town very clearly identified as Wappinger Singular Falls, but there's a real town in the area they're talking about called Wappinger's Falls, plural, and I don't know what that decision is. I don't know if it's like, the town's like, hey, come on, we don't want people saying we have a serial killer. So, I went to college in Poughkeepsie. It's like right down Route 9 from there.
Oh, that's funny.
We don't need that.
They clearly filmed it in just some of the locations. I looked it up. They filmed it in a town called Piermont, which is closer to Manhattan. Mm-hmm. So that's a little bit about that background. But whatever it is, there is the question asked, why do serial killers always come from bucolic small towns, which I thought was nice. April... how would you characterize the way that Jessica is received at the small town police station when she shows up with her fancy New York City leather jacket and her little PI badge?
Mm-hmm. At first, that cop was really rubbing me the wrong way, how she's like, you people can just come in here. And I love Jess' response, like, you people. Or she's like, what am I? I thought that was fantastic.
Yeah, and it's something that you don't get nearly enough of, I think, you know, just how afraid regular people are, you know, non-powered people are of these people with abilities. I mean, it's a much more pronounced part of the X-Men mythos, you know, mm-hmm. that just how feared they are because they're born with their abilities. But, it's just a reminder that, like, yeah, look, as much as people get excited when they see Captain America on TV, the idea that, you know, you have these other, you know, these Hell's Kitchen / Harlem, you know, powered people just living and walking amongst you, for non-powered people, it's a little frightening. So, Adam, understandably, she doesn't want to turn over the, her files let her start traipsing around the town, you know?
Well, this is one of my favorite moments of the episode, the text, Patsy needs a meltdown.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And this is really kind of honed in where the show just became Simon and Simon for a little bit. And I'm like, oh, of course. Like, you know, they're always referencing, like, other genre shows and things like that. And this was this is that detective show dynamic. They're very, like, Trish is very the buttoned up, you know, detective. Simon and Simon is a detective show from the 80s about brothers. And one was this outlandish, like, Vietnam vet kind of, you know, and one was really buttoned up, like, more of the Trish. And, like, I'd say the vet was more Jessica.
So Jessica's Gerald McGraney.
Yes!
There you go, yes!
And Trish is Parker Stevens.
Oh, my God. So. I would not have been able to pull out the names of those actors.
That's why I'm here.
And they see
that I didn't Google that. So
wow. No.
That tells you how much useless information is so in well this done. Head.
But so do you think that's a fair comparison?
I do. And I love the fact that that Ryan has already found
that's
a
fantastic.
Picture for those watching.
Oh.
Yeah. I mean, look, you know, I think Jessica could make that hat work. But anyway, yeah, I think, you know, and look, that's why you need to have somebody to help you out in those situations.
But you know, April and I were talking about this before the show. This is why I think we really like this season, because this is what feels like what this show should be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I thought that the season two was a little bit of a tonal diversion, and it was personal about Jess, but like this is what I've been waiting for this show to be, is like this fun, you know, this mashup of a superhero show, yes, but mostly a private eye show.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah, and they're able to do some really good private eye work as they stay at a very luxurious looking, motel, and the realization that apparently tractor rollovers are actually a thing.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And
who knew?
Yeah, I guess people who have tractors. So they really get the feeling that that's not Salinger's first kill. And so what we get in, you know, sort of the earlier part of the episode is that police officer is very protective of the people in her town. They know Gregory, and they know sort of the bad upbringing that he had, and she felt like we weren't able to protect him.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to do that now. But they then, excuse me, are able to come across the very surprising turn of events that apparently one of his best friends on the wrestling team disappeared before graduation. So I think that became pretty apparent to everyone except for the missing boy's mother, because I think the dad seemed to feel like, all right, yeah, I think she's onto something here. Mm-hmm. But what a great moment for Salinger, without even being really in this episode, when they see the Christmas card that he sent to this family whose son they murdered, and it's a picture of him standing where he buried the kid. He'll always be with you. I mean, it didn't take Jessica long. You know, Jessica knows Salinger well enough at this point that she knows what to do with that.
He can't help himself, like, doing a little nod to his work.
But, I mean, that's a very serial killer thing, mm-hmm. For the way that we know serial killers, yes. Which is...
completely, you know, from fiction.
Right. Fictionalized serial
true
killers.
True detective.
You
know?
Yeah, right, exactly. Because you feel like your real serial killers get away with something, and mm-hmm. then they don't feel the need to brag about it. They're like, oh man, this is so awesome that I got away with this.
Yeah.
So, and I think it's, Jessica's able to understand that as upsetting as it is in this moment for these parents, they're going to get the closure that they just can't have it if they don't know, look, he's buried here under this gazebo. I think.
Mm-hmm. Great powers moment here.
Yes.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. This is that was one of the things I was excited about, was that you actually see her really using her powers, just, you know, pounding away at the dirt and just really trying to find it. Is that the sort of thing that you're always looking for in the show, Adam? Like,
yeah, I want to see a little bit more. Like, I like flipping a gazebo over,
mm-hmm. yeah.
And I loved the officer coming, drawing the gun on her. Jessica, like, I'm not stopping. And then Patsy or Trish shows up, and you know, with the camera there, right? So yeah. it was well done. Like, people still don't know that Trish has powers. We still have this as a secret.
Yeah.
So she's still her secret weapon, but she does the smart things, like, you're on candid camera.
Right.
What are you going to do? Are you going to shoot her for what? And then, of course, the reveal. It's great. Great moment. Loved it. Loved that whole little road trip bit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I thought that it was great character interaction for both Jessica and Trish, just so showing how well they work together. When Trish didn't need to use her powers, April, you know, it's just mm-hmm. like, obviously the media is so important. It factors into both of these episodes fairly heavily. It's just like, so you're going to shoot this person mm-hmm. while I film you? I mean, go ahead, I guess. So that really brings them to... what they wanted from that trip is, you know, just wasn't where they thought that it was going to be, was getting this evidence that he, you know, of whoever he killed first, and just the idea that he wouldn't have hid, and he wouldn't have been able to hide evidence the way that he is now. So it obviously seems like a very useful piece of evidence, which we'll talk more about in a moment. But there's other things to tackle in this
yes.
episode.
Mm-hmm. Malcolm.
Which is indeed Malcolm. we've talked a lot about Julian on this show. He has a sort of a great moment when it's like, yeah, I'm working with Jessica. I need all the stuff you have on Salinger.
She said it'd be okay.
Yeah, she said it'd be okay.
Oh, well then, yeah, just go ahead and take everything. And Julian's like, yeah. And even when Trish says it's okay, she's like,
I have her proxy.
Yeah, she's like, I need really? To hear this from Jessica. It's like, and you know, Trish is just like, I do think that Jessica would have been fine with that in that mm-hmm. moment. But Julian's right to be like, you know, you are just Patsy. I don't know if I can if I can really trust you. Mm-hmm. But what do you feel like is going on for Malcolm at this point? You know, he's just desperate. To me, he's desperate in a way that's unlike any way he's been desperate before mm-hmm. in the previous seasons. You know, talk a little bit about what you feel like his state of mind is in episode 7.
I feel like we're finally noticing Malcolm starting to do the right thing again, that he sees what Hogarth is doing and he is not buying into it. And he's like, this is not right. We know that he's a killer. And he finally starts to side more with Jessica this episode.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, obviously his tenure at Alias Investigations didn't end the way he wanted it to, but I think he knows Jessica's a good person. He feels very strongly that if she believes this guy is this bad, we have to do everything we can to help him. Also in this episode, as we alluded to earlier, Adam, Trish can't stop herself. Trish needs to call the New York Bulletin, and when she didn't do a sit-down interview with Karen Page, I was definitely disappointed.
Oh, yeah.
But still, of course, she needs the media attention. So let's elaborate more for what this all means for Trish.
So are we referring to when she gets herself photographed?
Yeah, well, she gives out the anonymous, where she gets out the burner flip phone, and I have an anonymous tip.
Yeah, so she does some posing, which I think is a mistake, because I agree with Dorothy, actually. Her costume is not, I mean, it's like, it makes Daredevil's initial costume look way, you know, like way advanced.
Yeah.
Which I love, by the way. So, why does she do that? Do we know why she does it? Is it just that she wants the attention? Like, within
Jessica's getting accolades and praise, and Trish is literally standing right there at times, or sometimes across the street, and she just feels left out, and she needs to be a part of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think she would be much more valuable to Jessica if she was okay to live in the shadows just for a little while.
Yeah,
you know? But she's just like, she really needs that rush. Well, she's, I mean, she's a child actress.
She's so public now. She needs that.
Yeah.
But I also wanted to talk about Malcolm a little bit, because Malcolm, he's completely double crossed Hogarth now, and I don't know, is Zaya kind of busts him on the computer? Zaya finds out that Malcolm has been talking to this vigilante. Yeah. She sees him on the computer.
I think in this episode she just sees it, and
right?
And we can talk about it. You know,
well, she just sees it.
She sees it, yeah.
But, and that's what I mean by sort of busting him. But what my question there was, still not sure if Malcolm's going to make it out of the series live. Still don't know where my prediction is about the death of Malcolm. But is Malcolm and Barry, is that in a place where it would have been recorded to? Did that happen in that same room?
No, that was at his apartment.
Okay.
But we don't know that wasn't recorded.
He was remembering it, though, right? He remembers it and feeling really guilty about it.
Yeah, I think that, you know, you talk to your girlfriend and you remember the prostitute who gave you a freebie.
It's not a great feeling.
Yeah. We've all been there.
I'm glad you said it.
I'm just kidding. I don't have guilt.
The important thing from this episode, though, is the ending sequence, where we see that Salinger is a wrestling coach.
Oh, this is great.
To children, and how both Malcolm and Jessica, that just doesn't sit well with them, knowing what he is. It's weird, because I think on a weird level, even though he's deranged, psychopath, serial killer, I don't think he has ill intentions for these children. I would not say he should be around children, but I don't think he sees it that way.
Mm-hmm.
These are kids who have potential ahead of them. He wants to help them so that hopefully they can be this sort of next level being like he is. But boy, if those kids knew what he was, they wouldn't be so happy cheering for him getting his ass kicked, right, April?
Absolutely. I am shocked that he doesn't have a restraining order against him.
Very surprised. Yeah, I feel like that's coming in a future episode.
Yeah.
And I haven't seen, if there is that in an episode, I haven't seen it.
Yeah.
I've only seen up to episode 8. But yeah, I thought there's when he's like, come on in, and she's like, so he invites her in, and she goes in. I'm like, yeah, I mean, that's two wrongs.
He can't not try to prove his superiority over
her.
He's got to show that not only did he get away with it, but he's teaching these kids, he knows the effect that's having on her. He wants to know that he can walk right up to her and be public. And then he's going to, like, wrestle her, and he thinks he could, like, out-wrestle her.
Yeah, and I'm surprised that we didn't see him, like, show up in a neck brace with Jerry Hogarth at his side at the beginning of episode 8, by the way. Like, I really thought that's where this was going, was, like, you know, it's like, because she didn't really hurt him, but it's enough. I mean, we saw other people filming it. She threw him around a couple of times, and I think he's not going to come to terms with the fact that she is stronger than him. Even though he feels like she's cheated, it doesn't matter.
Yeah. He's like, they all think you're a cheater.
Right. Mm-hmm. And she's like, not really? A cheater.
They're cheering, they're laughing, the kids are loving it.
So it's a great moment, but I'm just like, you know, this isn't going to really help the cause, especially April, when she says something about, is this the move that you used to kill Nathan? Because I understand wanting to get the rise out of him. Nathan, of course, is his friend from the wrestling team back in Wappinger Falls. What do you think about Jessica blurting that out to him?
They both can't help themselves. They want to know that they're one step in front of the other.
Mm-hmm.
And that really sets him off for episode 8.
Yeah, and let's move it over to episode 8 because we get a sense that we basically start off with Costa talking to Jessica that this masked vigilante, Hellcat, is really taking so much of the attention. And it's more than anything, it's cost him the clout that he needs to get a hold of the body from upstate. So I think that we really see how difficult this situation has become. I think as much as Trish is an asset, Adam, she definitely is holding Jessica back in the pursuit of actually getting this guy.
Yeah. She's made their job worse because they had Costa willing to help and do the workup on the evidence that she now found, but now he's buried because of this vigilante thing. So Trish is literally getting in the way of their own investigation by making Hellcat public. Mm-hmm. But this is where I mentioned Dorothy becomes involved. And I love Dorothy. She is so resilient.
Uh-huh. She's never just like, stopping.
Oh, we're doing this now. Fine. But let me design the costume. You're going out in that?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And then she drops the cat reference.
Yes,
everybody loves cats.
It should have a theme like cats. Everybody loves cats.
Great. Okay. Yes, we're waiting for that. Great.
We get the first attempt at giving Trish a superhero name, Beanie Girl, which doesn't seem to stick. I think Hellcat might sound a little bit...
Burger Boy and Beanie Girl. Like that.
Yeah, we've got great Jessica characters in here. And then just sort of interestingly, I'm like, all right, I guess we're going here. Costa and his partner are trying to adopt an orphan from Burundi, and I'm like... Okay, I guess we're getting that in here too,
right.
You know. And I'm just like, I don't know that I need to go home with Costa,
mm-hmm.
but I feel like maybe that's going to factor in. But he makes the point about to Jessica that she needs more than just the job.
Yeah,
and
no, he's a good character.
Yeah,
I think he's great.
No, I definitely like him. I just like in that moment when I'm like, he's adopting a kid, but
right. Why are we going here?
Yeah, right. Exactly. It's like she needs your help. Uh-huh. Jessica does.
But it's also messing up his life because now he's got to do that thing where, if they don't deem him a potential good parent, it could affect him mm-hmm. being able to get the kid. And that's like one of those red flags, the guy he's too dedicated to his job that he can't, be here. Mm-hmm. But listen, I mean, he's a detective. You got to understand at the adoption agency that he might have to take this call.
The text was literally like, Salinger's going to kill someone tonight. I need you.
Yeah,
like, you can't ignore that.
Yeah. And, it seems like his partner kind of understands, this is really a big case. Mm-hmm. And it's not that moment where Costa's like, I'm putting the phone down.
Right.
I'm not going to help her. He knows kind of the priorities here. We're going to talk a lot about Salinger. I just kind of want to tidy up a couple things with some of the other characters in this episode 8. Malcolm sees that Zaya has edited the video where he's talking to Trish. I think that it's an interesting choice because obviously she cares for him, but Hogarth is just incensed that this person exists and is snooping around her files. And this is sort of something we didn't really touch on in the previous episode. It comes out that somebody matching this description of the masked vigilante had basically accosted some of the clients of Hogarth's law firm. And this is where she talks about how they think she's weak. They think that she's going to take this, and she wants this woman unmasked, which of course becomes Malcolm's job, which would be really easy if he wanted to do his job.
Mm-hmm.
Since he knows her.
Mm-hmm.
Apart from that, I mean, what is it about this that you think bothers Hogarth so much? Just the fact, April, do you think that it's that she's kind of been used by another superpowered person?
Yes, absolutely. And just the fact that she is dying, and through these past couple episodes, she constantly saying, this is my legacy, and she doesn't want anything messing with that.
Yeah, I really think that she really, like I was talking before about Malcolm, how the walls are closing in on her. And for Jerry, I think it should feel that way. But she's just Jerry, and I think it's like she'll just continue standing tall, no matter what happens. Probably with her last dying breath, she's going to mm-hmm. be like, nope, everything's fine.
I got it covered.
Definitely.
She just wants that winning record because she certainly doesn't have... Now, Jerry's affected because she doesn't have her tender, sweet side anymore. There's that Kith that was making her want to live for a positive reason is now flipped around. She's her own... hubris, once again, has worked against her. Now she's lost Kith because of what she tried to do. And now this is the only thing she has, mm-hmm. is that reputation. So she's back to the old Hogarth and her ways.
Were you surprised, Adam, that Zaya did edit the video so that it didn't look like Malcolm walked out before Trish started?
I was surprised and pleased because I like Zaya.
Yeah.
I like her, and she is also fairly complicated. Like, she wants to rise at this Hogarth law firm. We have not seen her have any sort of ambiguity about mm-hmm. working for Hogarth. And she chooses Malcolm. And, again, it's going to come out, because it always does, about Malcolm's dalliance. But
yeah,
I feel like Zaya's going to be able to take it and move forward.
Right. And the other thing, before we move on from Hogarth, is at this point we're well aware of the fact that they've lost 2/3 of their business in the Rand Corporation. And right. she even says Danny Rand would never stand for this. And then the reference is like, oh, well, he's off on some sabbatical, which if you saw season 2 of Iron Fist, the sabbatical is that crazy third season of Iron Fist that we're never going to see, which would have been amazing. So so we get the realization that, it happened sort of, as with most things with the Rand Corporation, it happened without Danny signing off on it. And I think that's a logical explanation that, her former partner is.
Quick interjection. Do you think that there's a chance we'll get a guest star from a Danny Rand or someone?
I don't know who we're going to have, but I have a feeling from articles I haven't clicked on that there are some, at least one cameo at some
point. Because there usually is at least one.
So
it's usually Night Nurse.
Right. Yeah,
but
she actually hasn't been around for a while. Yeah. So I'm trying to finish this at a pace where I don't have it ruined for me. But I feel like
I know.
I was hoping that we would at least get somebody because this is the last Marvel Netflix mm-hmm. series. All right. So we're gonna go a little bit more than the time that's up there because we have to really talk about this. The main focus of the episode is this video. That Salinger sends
that fake
to
Jessica. Snapchat
it's
app.
The, yeah.
I love fake social media when there's like a fake Facebook mm-hmm. and all that when they just have to come up with their own. It's like how about InstaYap?
Yeah.
Probably because your first like 9 choices are already actually taken by various businesses. So we get this video and it really again we talk about this being a detective show. It's a great device where look the clock is ticking by 7:00. Everyone's going to know what a fraud you are, basically. And her and Trish do some great work trying to figure out, who that is. What do you think about the framing of this episode, April? Just this idea that they have this 7:00 deadline.
I thought that was really interesting, having that ticking clock. And I thought it was really smart of Salinger the whole episode, like how he hired that fake guy to sit there and watch Animal Planet.
Yeah, which, by the way, where's that Craigslist at?
Great gig.
if you're out serial killing, I don't have any part of it, but I'll sit on your couch and watch TV. That's fine. Mm-hmm. I want that job. I thought that was a nice touch. That however they were surveilling him, they weren't close enough to know. Like, that guy doesn't look anything like him.
And they swore it too. They were like, "He is in there. We promise you." And Jessica's like, "Uh-uh."
Right, but it was cool that was his only crime at that point too. Like, mm-hmm. he was being surveilled, but like he wasn't under arrest or anything, so he wasn't really doing anything illegal. He was just eluding them
mm-hmm.
because he's so superior. Yeah. But I like, to answer your question, I really like the cat and mouse thing that they're doing.
Hellcat and mouse?
Hellcat and mouse. Jessica really got to him in the wrestling thing.
Yeah.
Really did what she wanted and set him off.
And realizing, I'm going to send him this video of me just breaking all of his stuff because, as we've talked about, the comparison to Kevin Spacey and Seven, just sort of the idea that she could have sent him a video of her like tilting one of his diplomas and he probably would have freaked out. But instead she just like smashes all this crap.
Yeah.
And I think it's a very dangerous tactic, but Jessica was absolutely right. It's very effective because he was very rattled and he was very upset. I don't know that he changed what his plan was at that point. Do you think that video from Jessica, well, let me put it this way. The woman who they identify working at the chemical company, who that's sort of a that didn't quite work for me, that tenuous connection of like, oh, so he knows the company that had the whatever those chemicals were that spilled on Jessica in the car accident that made her superpowered. Okay, I guess. So do you think that he was originally going to kill that woman, and then when he got so incensed by the video that he changed his mind? I'll ask you first, Adam.
I don't know that he did. I think that this was perhaps him being a step ahead of her again and being like, oh, she's figuring out my pattern. She's going to know that I'm going to connect it to something in the past. So it's a red herring. Mm-hmm. He deliberately sends her on the wrong path. He does get to her. He is pissing her off. But I don't know. It's an interesting question. We don't really have confirmation one way or another. You could say that maybe he was going to kill this person, and then when she does that, he ups it and makes it even more personal.
That's what I was thinking more after the fact, not in the moment. Do you have thoughts on that one way or the other, April?
Yeah, I'm not sure what his plan of thoughts was. I like to think that she was the one who set him off, and that he was originally going to kill that girl, but maybe he just wanted to keep her busy the whole day.
Right, but the fact that they were able to identify and get to that girl, mm-hmm. I think, is probably him wanting to keep them busy, mm-hmm. you know, because of what he actually planned, which we'll talk about momentarily. Them going around showing people this, like, do you know this woman, you know, in the hat whose face you can't see? Mm-hmm. I was like, look, you know, go ahead and give that a try, but...
Do you know the back of this woman's head?
So have you ever seen this hat before? Right. Like, did anyone ever wear this hat around you? You know, I'm glad that they didn't seem to get a positive ID on their shade, because mm-hmm. I really thought that was going to happen.
The television interview was great.
I did want to talk about that.
Yeah.
Dorothy showing her value here as someone who, as I mentioned in the intro to this episode of our show, the media manipulation of and Jessica can't quite. She serves the purpose that they intended of letting people know that, you know, this is a bad guy who's looking for this. If this is you, you should be worried. But Jessica, you know, definitely, we talked about Salinger getting rattled. Jessica can't help herself but get a little rattled by the questioning, right, April?
Yeah, I think this is my no filter moment.
Yeah, we'll just throw it in now.
Yeah, for the show, because...
No filter moment.
Some fun sound effect.
I know Ryan was waiting with that one.
Oh, there it is.
There was.
No, go with your instinct, buddy.
No, that was like, yeah, that was somebody signing into Windows 95. Yeah.
That was good. Is that interviewer was clearly trying to be very professional, and she's swearing on air.
This is what we talked about before. Mm-hmm. Allegedly. Uh-huh. Yeah, and Jessica swears twice, and I don't think they would have stuck with this, but you know, and Trish watching the live feed on her laptop was, you know, not delayed by even a minute. Okay, mm-hmm. But you know, we move on because these are not the things that should take away from what was a very entertaining and really terrible in the sense of what happens mm-hmm. episode. Uh-huh. So, and I like that when they find this woman, she's like ready to fight. You know, I mean, she's mm-hmm. not just like, oh, hey, you guys looking for me? She's like, what? What do you want?
Right.
You know? So I thought that surprised me. And just that sort of terrible realization that, you know, that I guess for Jessica, it's like, well, he's going to make this really personal, and I don't have any family left. And I think in that moment, as I'm watching, and tell me what each of you thought, I'll ask you first, April, did you think that meant, oh, okay, so in the next episode, I guess Salinger's going to actually go after Trish, not realizing that she has powers?
Yeah.
Did you think that's what they were setting up?
I definitely thought it was going to be him going after Trish.
Yeah. Did you expect the same?
Yeah, clearly, yeah. That's where they lead us. You know, she says she knows about my sister, and I love that Jessica calls her his sister again. Mm-hmm. So that's beautiful. That's not where they go. They do get kind of seven with it.
Yeah, and I was, you know, it just was just the realization of where it was going before it actually happened. It was like, uh-oh, because, you know, we've had a complicated relationship as viewers. With,
I believe
with
you
Dorothy.
Called for Dorothy's death earlier on in the...
you cursed her.
Earlier in our episodes.
You know, I think I was just trying to negate the idea that Malcolm and Burger Boy would still be alive eight mm-hmm. episodes in, by the way. And the only reason Eric's still alive is because he's gone right now.
Yeah, he's checked out.
He's on the land somewhere. Maybe uh-huh. he's gone up to Wappinger Falls and he's just laying low.
He's been gone both these episodes,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, mm-hmm. right, exactly. So just think of the burgers he's making. Mm-hmm. He's probably so much happier. But anyway, so we have this terrible realization that Salinger got to Trish's mom, Dorothy, mm. and you know, we as viewers know, as soon as we see her sitting in the chair, we're like, okay, and the only question is, how much of this are we going to see? And the answer is a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I did not expect it to be quite so graphic. What did you think of the reveal of Dorothy, April?
I thought it was interesting when Trish walks in, she's like, Mom? And there's like this huge pile of blood on the ground, and she just slowly walks over.
She's like, oh, Mom's always spilling red wine. Right. I'm sure everything is fine. What did you think, Adam, as that scene's playing out before we even get
there? I thought they were going to cheese it out and she was going to be almost dead.
Yeah.
And then she was dead.
Yeah.
And, yeah, that certainly brings me to my no-filter moment.
Go ahead.
Which was the final frames of the scene, which was Trish in the final frame of the scene, which we don't really know. Where it goes.
And my no filter moment is a little bit more lighthearted. It's when the waiter at the cafe called her a child star psycho. But I just love the fact that in that moment, Trish is trying to get the identity of someone by using something that apparently happened on an episode of her show. Wait, is this a hidden camera thing? I've totally seen this episode of It's
Patsy.
Do you
think it's really funny or ironic that Trish is useless as a PI because she's such a public figure, but really good as Hellcat with a mask on?
It's hysterical to me, actually, that she tries to be a PI. It's like, wait a minute,
everybody knows Patsy. It's the least private high imaginable.
And for me, I alluded to this at the top of the show as we wind down here, that some of these episodes of these Netflix shows have ended in a way where, like, you need to see what's next.
Mm-hmm.
This has definitely been the hardest where I'm like, I'm not watching the next one. I can't watch 9 and 10 anymore just because I need to not know when we talk about it on this show. But I really want to know. So now, when we go home, I can watch it.
Yes.
We'll get some final thoughts, but before, so everyone knows that we'll be back to talk about episodes 9 and 10 1 week from today at 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 Eastern. We'll do 9 and 10, and then on next Friday, which is the 28th, we will do two shows. We'll do 11 and 12, and then an entire show for 13. So, but what I want to make sure you know is our next episode is a week from today at 2 Pacific. And sorry, what were you going to say, April?
I was just going to say, real quick, what are your predictions? Do you think she kills him or no?
No. I don't think that Trish kills Salinger. I think that Jessica is able to stop him from getting killed, especially because it's only going to be episode 9.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think he's going to be dead. What do you think, Adam?
I think that Trish will take the mantle of Hellcat to honor her mother, who said Cat theme. You know, she called it out. So that's what I'm thinking. I'm thinking we are going to get a name check of Hellcat.
Yes.
As far as the killing, no, I don't think she's going to.
But if she does, that's going to be a great reveal of whatever Salinger has put in motion to ruin Trish.
If I go on with him dead. Yeah.
So we will talk more about this next week. But until then, Adam, where can people find you?
You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Adam Gertler, talking about all the things. Marvel, DC Movie News on Popcorn Talk Network, our sister station as well, on Fridays at 1 p.m., FX Movie Download, Eat a Hot Dog for Doghouse, and I will see you next week.
And April, where do people find you?
You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at April13Dawn.
You can find me at ChristianDMZ, and Sunday nights at 9 p.m. Pacific on Marvel TV Weekly right here on AfterBuzz TV. That's all we have for right now. We'll see everybody next week. Thanks.
Our founder, Kevin Undergaro, and me, Maria Menounos, would like to thank you for tuning in to AfterBuzz TV. Remember, we're not just the first, we're the biggest in the world, and we're the only destination for all your favorite TV shows. Whatever you crave, we've got it. So go to AfterBuzzTV.com and check out our lineup. Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.